If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. You may be aware, we've actually been reporting on COP29 in our newsroom, and we just wanted somebody who's actually there to give us a sense of how things are developing, particularly from our perspective. Usually you hear a lot of, you know, reporting from the perspective of especially the big guns, the bigger people, the bigger brothers in the world. And it's very important to assess what all of this means for us. Founder and editor-in-chief of Biggie Caesar, Mia Malan, is on the line with us. Thank you so much for your time, Mia. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Thanks for having me, Pamela.
So let's talk about, first of all, the climate. I mean, it's always one of those very difficult moments, right, where the world comes together for what is supposed to be a good idea or a good deed, but you hear that there will be dissenting voices, particularly from the bigger guns, especially the hosts this time around.
Yes, it's of course hosted in Baku, which is the capital of Azerbaijan. And Azerbaijan is a petrostate, so there's a lot of fossil fuel production here. And that's the kind of thing that this conference is trying to get rid of, so that we start to use greener forms of energy. And it was quite controversial when the president of Azerbaijan spoke last week and said that fossil fuels are a, you know, oil and gas are a gift from God, and we shouldn't judge it. So there is a lot of controversy around that. But this COP's focus is specifically finance. It's known as the finance COP.
Yeah.
And what the finances are about is it's about who needs to pay what for the world to fight climate change. Mm. And it's a little bit of a fight for justice because the global north caused most of the climate change. The fight is about how much money are they going to give countries like South Africa to transition to greener forms of energy because it's costly.
It's one of those, South Africa has received some money, you know, but it's contentious because many are saying, well, in fact, you know, how is it? Is it a loan? Was it meant to be a loan? Should it have been a loan? The developing countries are also saying, well, in fact, it's not enough. We're speaking of a billion plus right now. We're not interested in many billions. We're interested in fact, a trillion to have a conversation. Are we talking yet about the structure of this money that the developing world is asking for?
So this COP is trying to figure out what would be the mechanisms to distribute such money. And there's a lot of disagreement about whether money and how much money has been given already. Mm. So the Western countries say there was an agreement to give 100 billion rands. Yeah. And they argue they've given it, but it wasn't directly, as you mentioned, like in direct money or direct loans even. Some of those amounts they're referring to were through general grants for aid in general. And they would argue, well, some of that, you know, was used towards making the world a better place or the environment a better place. So the Global South, for instance, mostly doesn't agree that that money has in fact been given. And that 100 billion rands is sort of a thumbsuck of, you know, how much should be given. Mm. So there's been quite meticulous calculations now, and those calculations, as you've mentioned, come to over a trillion rand. 1.3 trillion is what the Global South is arguing, including South Africa is arguing that as well. Our chief negotiator here is our Minister for Environment, Dion George. Mm-hmm. He arrived on the 15th. And those are the sort of negotiations that are taking place this week. So people sit in different meetings and have arguments. And last week they started to just make their points. This is the week in which they need to make decisions.
And then, of course, in the mix were the US elections. And there is a delegation there. But, you know, it's a Biden's delegation. And Trump is coming in, who's already told us he's going to scrap all of that. Whatever agreement is there, he says it's a scam.
Yes, you're right. He calls climate change a scam and a hoax. And when he was president the first time around, from 2017 to 2021, He pulled America out of an agreement, which is known as the Paris Agreement, because it was signed in Paris in 2015. And this is the agreement you may hear people in the climate change world talk about, the Earth not warming up more than 1.5%. More than 1.5 Celsius degrees, I mean, compared to pre-industrial ages. And that agreement is legally binding. So it means countries who sign up to it have to do the right things to make, to stop that from happening. And Trump pulled America out of that. And then Biden became president and he signed up again. And to all likelihood, Trump will pull America out of that again. And the danger of that is not just that America would start, you know, doing more, burning more fossil fuels. That's very bad for the environment. They're already the biggest emitter per person in the world. The danger is that their attitude will rub off on other Western countries who may already not be doing enough and now will do even less. The other implication is that part of that Paris Agreement is that the Global North countries acknowledge to the Global South that they need to help to pay because they caused a lot of this, and that, you know, America's likely to give nothing. They're already not one of the biggest contributors to these funds, but that Trump is likely to say he wouldn't contribute, and that that would also rub up on other Western countries.
I mean, we all now know, when you listen to the accounts of many, many countries, particularly in the Global South, who speak directly of how they, particularly those who are representing NGOs, how they are affected by climate change, health and you know crops and all of the things that we've all seen and witnessed. But there is a sense, and even as the UN Secretary General warned that, you know, we are losing time very, very quickly, there's a sense that even his voice is mute. You know, they don't really care. The bigger guns don't really care. And the voices of the many, many NGOs that are there to represent the global people's voices don't really matter.
Well, you know, I spoke to Kumi Naido about a year ago about, you know, he's a very prominent climate activist. And I spoke to him about climate anxiety, which is when people get, you know, nervous about what's going to happen to the earth. What if we can't control the climate? And we spoke about mental health, the mental health of activists like himself. And his comment was that one of the things that affects him the most is the fact that you will sit in a big room of very powerful companies, powerful leaders. You'll explain what's happening and they'll agree with you in that room and say, yes, absolutely, we need to fight it. And then they turn around and they do nothing. And that feeling of powerlessness, that they just don't care, is something that is a very difficult situation for climate activists to fight, because they fight and fight and fight and people say they'll do things and then they don't.
Having said that, Mia, then realistically, people who've been attending these for years and years, what are they hoping will actually come out of this particular COP29?
So they're hoping for agreements in terms of an amount that will be funded by the global North to help the Global South to transition. They're hoping, you know, next year in 2025 is the year in which countries need to set new targets, need to say how many carbon emissions, by how much will they reduce their country's carbon emissions. Those goals are for 5 years at a time. And the previous time that they set them was in 2020. So part of this COP is to move towards that, to sort of have a framework to figure out who will do how much. And of course, one of the things that's really interesting with climate change or these reducing carbon emissions is something called carbon target, carbon credits or offsets. So part of what they're negotiating for is that, say, if you are a Western country and you need to reduce your emissions, but it's really costly and you feel you can't stop industries or it's too soon to do it because your country's economy will suffer, then you offset that by getting carbon credits and say, oh, well, in South Africa, we'll give you money to plant trees,
yes,
you know, so that we can have our carbon emissions, because it's all about a global goal and trying to balance it out. So those are all part of trying to figure out what would count for an offset, what would be acceptable to do, so that next year, which would be considered a bigger COP than this one, is started with clear guidelines.
Part of the problem, though, and the real elephant in the room, though, with some of our countries, is that even as we go and negotiate on platforms like this, when it comes to what we do with that money, and how we actually make it work on the ground, we failed. You've seen what we did with the floods in KZN, where there was money allocated to assist families, and then suddenly, you know, nobody got anything. Nobody actually got to see the benefit of a community or a country that understands that climate change has affected them in this way. And even as the money was allocated, they would not get to see the benefits of that. So it is complex in that way, that we ourselves don't really do very well with these funds.
Accountability is a huge issue. And I think it's not just climate change, of course, where you see this during COVID. We saw it when there's huge amounts of money, and crises demand huge amount of money. So there's a bigger chance for corruption. So that absolutely is an issue. But having said that, one thing that South Africa has done well so far is we have a Climate Change Act, which basically gives our environment minister powers to allocate targets for sectors, to say, Eskom, you have to reduce emissions by so much and by this time, you know, and the transport sector has to do it. Many countries don't have laws like that. You know, it's not set in stone. So we've signed, the president has signed the act. It will likely get gazetted towards the end of the year or early next year. And then there will be, it will be proclaimed, and we'll start, parts of it will be proclaimed, and we'll start to implement that. So at least we've set a law in place. Many countries aren't even there.
Well, thank you so much. All the best, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to see you when you get back. Thank you. Thank you very much for making time for us, Mia.
Thanks for having me.
Mia Malan is founder and editor-in-chief of Becky Caesar.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.